Aren't we silenced, everyone?
Yeah, we have no more thoughts. No, we just have no more thoughts.
You were thinking about Stephen Fry and the parrot.
I was thinking about Stephen Fry. I'm going to put that audio at the start of this podcast.
We're going to be arrested.
You can bet on that, America.
A typical male, Sirocco is clearly only interested in one thing.
Oh, look at that.
Ow. God, he's got sharp claws.
He's getting a bit frisky.
Ow! Ow!
Do you think it is a? He's actually attempting a sort of mating ritual. Yeah. He is. Right. Oh, right.
You are being sharp. Well, not. Ow! God, sharp.
Look, he's so happy.
Sorry. Ow! One of the funniest things I've ever seen. You are being shagged by a rare parrot.
Welcome to a nonprofit. It's April 26, 2017. My name's Atif.
I am Robert.
I'm Scott.
Did you forget the year?
No, I literally was just reading on my computer the date, and I did not stop. I did not stop, even though everyone should know it's 2017. Although, again, because of the time dilation effect of the Trump administration, it is entirely possible you might think it's a different era. It might be the 1950s, might be 2025. He and Erdogan are just, who can be in power longer?
Erdogan's going to have a problem because he's been depleting his police force, so he's got to leave somebody left.
Explain, please.
Yesterday, they arrested more than 1,000 policemen, and I think there's something like 9,000 they suspended.
Who arrested them? The other half?
The other half, yeah. Because once again, they're people related to Gulen, which is, I think, half the country.
Do you know what I'm a fan of? Constraints.
Yeah.
Rules and constraints.
They are constraining them.
Yes,
put them in jail.
Yeah. But it's an interesting point because is there any good leader that you can imagine who would arrest 1,000 police? I mean, it's hard to imagine. You could have a very corrupt police force, but it doesn't seem to me there's ever a time when rounding them up like that is an indicator of the way to handle it that a decent leader would do. It's very alarming.
Well, actually, this is a good question. This is sort of the Putin versus the West argument. Western powers are hypocritical, but also they make decisions slowly and they're thrall of special interests. Whereas the Putin strongman model, he can make decisions quickly, and he is at least theoretically less vulnerable to corruption.
I'm not sure that's true. I mean, I think he's a thrall to a certain kind of oligarchic special interest.
We can get into sort of Plato's philosopher king as a model of who Putin, not Putin is, but who Putin could be. So one of the problems with democracy is it has a lot of veto points. And there are a lot of different places where someone can stop something from happening. Which means there are a lot of different places where someone can extract something to make the process go again. So we saw that with the Affordable Care Act, where the Obama administration, even though for a long time there was a supermajority in the Senate, they still couldn't get stuff done because people could hold out. And then when Ted Kennedy died, it became much, much harder to get something done because everyone had a veto. Everyone had an ability to stop something. And so it naturally leads to a kind of corruption because for a lot of people, you may start soliciting something from an interested actor in order to get the process moving again. Whereas if you had like a China mixed economy, but certainly a little more command economy, at least in theory, you can get things done faster and there's less room for that kind of corruption. But you do have a different corruption, which is you're not responsive to people who are monitoring you, either voters or something else. If you are not Marcus Aurelius, you are probably going to descend into corruption anyway. I can imagine a leader who says, I'm going to perform a stark action that I think is right. It's kind of what Trump ran on, right? Like, I'm just going to blow shit up. And because you all know it's corrupt anyway. And I know people who voted for Trump who essentially voted for him like they were voting for Bane from the Batman movies. Like, everything is corrupt. I don't need to watch it burn. And Bane / Trump is going to make it happen. But because I believe in rules and that kind of thicket of laws and regulations, I would almost always prefer, even if the right thing to do was to take that kind of dramatic action, that you do things slowly and do things through bureaucracy, administrative action, that kind of stuff, and just get everyone else involved and get everyone else to buy in and just shore up the rule of law.
Basically, true checks and balances.
Yeah, and you buy into it. Like, show as a leader that you buy into it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not Plato really was seriously believed in a philosopher king. It's a little bit, you can argue about that, but I'm pretty sure that Putin is not the model of a philosopher king. He's more Thrasymachus. He's the tyrant on the other end of the spectrum. He may fancy himself that way. Plato might have disagreed with me here, but I think one of the big things, one of the reasons you don't just round up 1,000 policemen on the say-so of the leader, and I'm sure there's more to it in terms of what Erdogan's doing, is that if you address corruption and tyranny in a corrupt and tyrannical way, you don't really improve the situation. That's why it's better to have a truth commission after some kind of genocidal event rather than simply rounding up all the genocidaire. That doesn't work as well. That perpetuates the problem.
I don't think,
do you disagree, Scott?
Yeah, I agree with you completely, but I don't think that's his interest. So I don't think his interest is going for peace and stability. I think his interest is going for absolute control through fear.
Right. Usually that's the motivation for these kinds of things. If you really are seriously trying to create some kind of more stable, reconciled society, this is not the way you go about
correct,
it.
Yes. Correct. Correct. But this is something that I mean, living in Romania, there's still a lot of people around who live through communism through the whole cycle of it from the beginning to the end. And I heard a lot about in the early days, basically as it got further along, they had fewer arrests. But in the beginning, it's like have all sorts of arrests, have people totally off balance all the time. So nobody is willing to sort of stand up. And that's really effective, you know, so as horrible as it is, it's good for maintaining power.
Speaking of power, transitions of power, French election was recent. Kind of the expected result. What do you guys think?
Absolutely the expected result. This is one of those times where the polls were so spot on, which is actually something that's fascinating to me because there's been a lot of flack both about polls, but also about professional forecasters or analysts after both Brexit and Trump. And it's interesting because even though I was on the wrong side of maybe on Brexit and considerably on the wrong side of maybe on Trump, and I think that Robert was probably a bit more professional on this.
I have no idea what sense you mean that.
Well, I think that I was even more extreme in thinking that Trump was going to lose.
Oh, I don't know. I was pretty extreme at the end.
But we were at least looking at the polls. And so there's been a big talk about bubbles and whether we're living in bubbles and basically don't have, you know, basically whether we don't have good contact with people from the opposing side or opposing point of view. But polls shouldn't deal with that much. I mean, polls should basically be this is a cross sample of the country, more or less. And in the case of France, they were accurate within about 1% as far as picking who was going to make it to the next round. And so there's all sorts of talk about, you know, whether it's nationalism's on the rise, people aren't going to show up, whose base is stronger. But all of this was really, really well reflected in the polls. And so now we're at the second stage where the final round of voting between two people, between Le Pen and Macron. And the polls are showing, I don't remember what it is today, but roughly 20% difference between their likely outcome. Like, you know, so basically, like, let's say if one's getting 40, one's getting 60, that's basically insurmountable. And I shouldn't say insurmountable, afraid to be wrong three times in a row on elections. But I think it's really extreme because in the case of the election in the U.S. and certainly in the case of the Brexit vote, it was within the normal margin of error. I mean, it was sort of on an outlier with the case of Trump, but it was within the realm of a shift of 3%, 2 or 3% was enough to throw the election one way or the other. But a shift of 20%, that would take a really, really incredible string of events to change it. I don't even think that Cozy Bear is having much luck on that.
Yeah, I generally agree. I think, though, maybe there were some people that are suggesting that polls are now systematically off, but they vary. They're off a little bit sometimes, but sometimes they're spot on. It's actually a little surprising they were so spot on in this case to me, because they were so close. It wouldn't have been a terrible surprise if maybe Fillon or even Mélenchon had snuck into the second round because they weren't that far off in the polls. But this was what was expected. I actually lowered, in my opinion, Le Pen's chance of winning overall after the election result because she's going up against Macron. And just in general, because of the way it went down, if turnout had been much higher for her, there'd been a poll imbalance in her favor, I might have thought, oh, she has a better chance. I'm not as confident, Scott, as you are that Macron is a lock, only because I don't really trust hypothetical second round polling before the election took place. Now we're starting to get second round polls after the results of the first round. But I always feel like something new can happen once the new coalition stabilizes. It's a huge gap to overcome. You're totally right about that. But I'm not 100% confident, especially after Mélenchon refused to endorse Macron. So I don't know where they're essentially angry Bernie voters in France. And I don't know if they are going to turn out in Macron's favor on election day.
It's funny that you mentioned the Angry Bernie voters, because I had a conversation today about Angry Bernie voters in France.
Well, don't you have one every day?
Yeah. No, it's, I have a friend here who's Romanian, but who's very fluent in France and spent significant time there. And he's appalled because he's got friends who are basically not going to show up for the vote. That they went to the first round and they're just like, you know, we don't like Macron because Macron is basically, in their view, capitalist, who's going to completely destroy the common person or the little person. And but at the same time, Le Pen is nationalist, fascist, whatever you want to say. And so that's unacceptable. So they're just not going to show up. And so we're essentially trying to lobby these people to say, show up, because it still, you know, matters. And I was mentioning that Bernie actually did go out and vote, and he did try to convince people to vote for Hillary, but a lot of his supporters did not. And so it does seem like it could be that could be a significant event. I don't think it's going to be significant to the 20% level of, you know, a 20% shift in the number of people voting for Le Pen. But I think it could. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not a 20% split, but in the end, it ends up being 11%, which would still be a huge shift. But I'd be very surprised if they can make up this whole difference. But yeah, I mean, we have a little bit of time to wait and see if there are more polls before the end. Not much time.
I agree. I think the result will be different than in the United States, and partly because we don't have an electoral college in France.
Right.
But you have the same narrative of people revolting against the establishment, which you also had in the Dutch election, where the result was different. The right nationalist guy lost, but at the same time, other parties kind of bent a little bit towards that right nationalist party's not going away. They are a permanent part of Dutch politics now, just like Le Pen is and her Front National are going to be a permanent part or a long-term part of French politics.
Yeah. But when have polls been off by 20%?
Oh, I don't think they will be.
That's a huge amount.
It is a huge amount. I think even when you talk about 20%, it's probably, you know, it turnout won't even affect it. Right. It's a huge amount. I totally agree. I think it's probably more fluid because of the way they do their voting system. They got these rounds. I'm not 100% confident, but it would be a surprise. It would now be a pretty big surprise if Marine Le Pen won.
I was thinking about Marine Le Pen. I was thinking about Trump and his 100 days, and specifically what he has, because we were talking before the podcast that he seems like a dude who forgot his anniversary and now is just scrambling to give America something for the 100 day anniversary. It's like, hey, maybe Mars.
Can I cut back to one thing on the French election?
You may.
When I'm watching commentary on this on the TV, I get the feeling that there's people who once every, I don't know how often they vote in France, every 4 years or whatever it is. If you're a political scientist, you have a chance to get on TV for a week or two. And if the outcome is basically predetermined, then nobody's going to talk to you anymore. So you have these people where more or less you're at least at a 90% chance of Le Pen losing, but I would say more close to 95, 97. But if you say that, nobody's going to turn on the TV anymore. They're going to switch channels. So it's like they're inventing, you know, all sorts of amazing possibilities, you know, basically creating narratives of how everything is possible. And this is one thing that we are more or less discouraged from doing. And I think, like, you know, following sort of cold statistics like 538, where they look at numbers, polls of polls, is more effective, but it doesn't do well for a pundit making money for the next 2 weeks if you're French.
Yeah, no, I agree. So Trump, 100 days.
Yep.
He has thrown out a lot of stuff. I think probably the thing that he has just kind of thrown out there in his office is leaking. And this is clearly we live in weird times. Two of the stories that were on the New York Times front page for the last couple of days. One, which I think was yesterday, maybe it was today, was talking about how, I think it was New York Times, maybe in The Hill, was talking about how the members of the Trump administration love to lie to the media. It's a competition. Like they do it simply to see if they can do it. There's apparently some internal competition to see who can get the biggest lie published in a mainstream media source or some media source, because they view the media as an enemy. And also, there's an advantage to them to disinformation. Like, it's just a different approach to government. So, in addition to the false information coming out of the Trump administration, there was another story about NAFTA. There's a story earlier this week about Trump imposing a tariff on wood coming out of Canada, like 20% tariff, I think, which, as the Canadians pointed out, will affect home prices. And I think I saw an estimate that said the expected price of a new home is going to be about $1,500 more in the United States after this. And now there is a report in the New York Times that says he is likely to sign an executive order, presumably announcing his intention to withdraw from NAFTA. Who knows how likely that is, but it seems like, I don't know if that's actually going to happen or not.
Well, we could forecast the likeliness. We're supposed to know.
Yes. No, we absolutely could. But it certainly seems as if with this 100-day marker coming up and nothing really of consequence except Gorsuch, which is really, I mean, that's McConnell. It's Trump.
That's a shoe-in, yeah.
Trump was given a list of names. McConnell was the one who engineered the whole thing. He engineered the blockade. A lot of people attributed the open seat to motivating people who otherwise didn't support Trump to come out and vote on election day. It may have swung the election. And then, of course, McConnell exercised the nuclear option, changed the rules of the Senate. So Trump is taking credit for that because it's really the significant accomplishment of his administration so far. But it's hard to really say that's a Trump accomplishment. He was given a list of names. He picked one. The person was nominated. So now it seems like he is really trying to find something to crow about in the next 100 days. And he's been pitching a lot of big stuff. What do you guys think? What do you expect over the next few days?
It seems like a really, I want to say a high variance time. Like, I don't understand.
Super.
They're throwing so much stuff out to see what sticks. Yes. Like whether or not they can withdraw from NAFTA. I assume someone in the administration will tell Trump what will happen to his presidency if he announces he's withdrawing from NAFTA now, and it's not good. So I don't think they're going to do that, but they floated that. They have a tax reform plan, which is, you know, super ambitious and totally not fleshed out. They want to pass in the next few days. They want to try to do healthcare again in the next few days. Maybe they're going to attack someone. I mean, there's just a list of things that they have proposed. I joke that it was like we're trying to figure out who's going to get the, which world crisis is going to get the rose in the last few days. It's like a reality show.
Is there any crisis or any big thing he could have done that they just forgot about? Like, let's help the administration. What else could they do that's showy for this first 100 days?
Retake the General Motors factory in Venezuela with force.
Don't
see. That would be awesome.
And we shouldn't even joke about that because we know Trump listens to this.
Oh, oops. Let's cut that one out.
Yeah. That's just, you know what? Because now that you floated it, now the idea is out there. What do you think the probability is that we send in people to retake that? Oh, so yeah. So Venezuela nationalize a General Motors factory. That's the end of that story. Venezuela is flailing. I think they have $10 billion left in the reserves. They have debt payments to make. It's a country in crisis.
Does it matter that Venezuela donated some money out of the public coffers to fund Trump's inauguration?
Oh, did it?
It did, in fact.
The answer is yes.
There are people in Venezuela who need to eat, but the government is funding the U.S. inauguration.
They are fleeing the country. They're selling everything they own, and they're fleeing
too. That's just a good investment. So,
well, that's probably how to think about it.
Yeah.
And it might be because maybe we don't nationalize there. I mean, we don't invade now, but I don't think we were going to anyway, but who knows?
This is why there are ethics lawsuits flying around. So what do you expect? I agree with you 100%. The high variance makes it very hard to forecast this administration because they say things because they trumpet their attachment to deception. They're happy to say, yes, we love to fuck with people, basically. We love to put out bad information. We love to be unpredictable. We love to create a climate of fear. All the things. Everything that is the opposite of Obama.
I think there's a giant difference between foreign policy and domestic policy. So in foreign policy, I think that he can try to basically give himself an A, and I would disagree, but he could try to give himself an A for foreign policy in his first 100 days by saying, look, I actually took action in Syria when there was a line that was crossed, and so America's back. We're not just sitting around making comments. We're actually doing something. I've created enough uncertainty in the North Korea area that, look, they haven't torched off a nuke yet, and if they do, there's going to be serious consequences. China is now, acting.
Credit where credit is due. We can't say that didn't work. Like, that's not how I would have gone about it, his sort of weird bluff and all the with North Korea, but it may have stopped a nuclear test. So,
let's not.
Hard to say. Hard counterfactual.
Yeah, let's not say but not implausible. Something didn't happen.
Right, but not implausible that could have worked.
Sure.
That's a risky thing to do because he could go ahead and trumpet that, and then the next day they could go ahead and do a nuclear test. So if he said my big success of my first 100 days is that we control North Korea, and the next day they shoot off a long range missile and do a nuke test, you know, that's basically at their whim.
That would be beautiful trolling.
Yeah. So hard to say, but certainly China seems more involved. Now, on a lot of these things, we could say it would have happened regardless of who was in power, you know, who was president, but I'd say, he has paid attention to North Korea. Which is basically what Obama said would be his biggest defining issue. But in terms of domestic policy, I don't think this works to just go for the, you know, madman theory for domestic policy.
Oh, and he bluffs and then he rescinds his bluff too quickly. Like, he's not very effective at all. And some of his bluffs, the threat to not fund Obamacare, the payments, the Obamacare payments, it's not a very good threat because he's going to pay the political price for this.
And they're going to give him to Congress. So the most recent, you know, draft of a bill for health care was that Congress is going to still have Obamacare.
That's an amazing story. Yes. Yeah. So for the listener, the most recent draft, the attempt to revive health care exempts members of Congress from the changes to
their
Affordable Care Act.
And their staff.
Yes,
yeah.
Because they have to be, I believe under the law, they have to be under the Affordable Care Act. Yeah. To receive their insurance. And so I guess they said, man, I've got type 1 diabetes, so I don't want to lose this. But for the rest of America, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so now they've spent the day either backtracking, or in one case, I think one guy tried to justify it by saying, we live in, like, District of Columbia is not a state, and it's a rule for states to have the option to change the Affordable Care Act, which I thought was a novel approach.
Technicalities,
to...
yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't really change the political optics. This is like getting rid of the ethics or undermining the ethics committee as soon as they get into office.
Yeah. Just the word my wife uses stupid. Brazen.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I think they're in a bind, though, because the coalition that elected Trump and that's in Congress and his base supporters make it very difficult for Republicans to come up with any major accomplishment because they just don't agree and they're not. So I don't know what he's going to do. There are things he could do if he wanted to do something relatively moderate or work with a few Democrats. They could put together a real infrastructure proposal, and it could be a big achievement. But politically, I don't think Trump could do that even if he were a more effective leader.
I don't understand how they can't do infrastructure that would get half of the Republicans and enough Democrats to go with it.
I can tell you.
Yeah.
Well, so this would be my guess. My guess is, and I had a conversation with a friend recently about Citizens United and McCain-Feingold, because I was an undergrad when they were lobbying for McCain-Feingold. I volunteered with Common Cause. I think there are issues where you can vote your conscience, almost like a parliamentary system. And then I think there are issues where you can expect an attack by the Koch brothers. I think right now there's so much outside lobbying pressure that's very, very hard. It would be very, very hard for any Republican to cooperate with a Democrat. And Trump, there was this hope, and I think people projected a lot of stuff onto Trump because he, to be fair, wanted to make himself a cipher people could project their own ideas onto. But I think there was this hope that he would be this transcendental dude. That's not the case. And I think now, I think members of Congress, because I remember reading some quotes from people, especially when the last Affordable Care Act vote and the Koch brothers came out and said, anyone who opposes this, we will donate money to in your next campaign. Like, we will protect you. You're one of ours. It's almost like the Warriors, that movie. Like, it's their gang, the Koch brothers gang. I think that outside interests would excoriate anyone who tried to cooperate with Democrats on any major piece of legislation. And we saw that with Paul Ryan, where he, when he was talking about Trump, the negotiations for the Healthcare Act, one of his quotes was, we don't want him to make any deal with Democrats, because then the final product isn't going to be Republican, is it? So right now, I think we are in a very, very tribal situation.
So you're essentially saying that when they're writing the legislation, even if it would be a pro-Republican piece of legislation, that if there were going to be significant numbers of Democrats voting on it, they'd find a way to change it, that wouldn't happen?
Well, this is like the Hastert rule, right? The sort of Denny Hastert's rule that you had to have at least a majority of Republicans voting on something. The problem is that they don't even have a platform they agree on. So they can't come up with something that they...
Hating Hillary was their platform.
Right. Or being against Obama or wanting to win power. But now they have it.
Is there any piece of infrastructure, though? So I seriously don't understand, and this is just my ignorance, but, you know, crumbling bridges. I mean, you'd think that that would be
a
pretty basic one.
Right, but they differ on how to do it. And a lot of Republicans really want tax cuts, and, you know, they want to do it through tax cuts, through incentives to get businesses to rebuild infrastructure and bridges. Now, I don't think that works super well, but they have a major disagreement on how to even do it. So that's the big problem, I think, because everyone thinks ideally it's nice to have better bridges, but a lot of Republicans don't think the government should be the one doing it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's such a focus on, I think, following the discussion, and not just that, but sort of the people who are essentially fiscal hawks who then come out and say, you know, we'd be actually willing to work with the deficit because we believe in supply side economics and all this stuff and the Laffer curve. We believe the peak of the Laffer curve is like at 15% rather than, I think empirically it's like 70%. But yeah, they're willing to just believe in a lot of good stuff that flows out of tax cuts But
it doesn't flow out of spending. That's the fascinating thing. The Laffer curve apparently only applies to tax cuts.
It's that's the point of the Laffer curve. At 0% tax rate, government doesn't get any money. At 100% tax rate, the government doesn't get any money. So somewhere in there, there's a peak of a curve that optimizes government revenue, and that's the optimum tax rate. And Republicans argue the peak of the Laffer curve is like 15-20%. And after that, you're net losing money in terms of government revenue. Whereas I think they're, empirically, it's like 70%.
If lowering taxes stimulates the economy, then presumably raising spending would also stimulate the economy. Like, you can't really economically have it both ways.
It sounds like Keynes stuff right there.
I know, but they're much more Keynesian when they think about taxes than when they think about spending. Although they spend plenty when they're in power too, so a lot of it's just hypocrisy.
Yes, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. What do you guys suspect is going to happen in the next few days? Like, what are your forecasts? You think a major something comes out of this administration? And because this podcast will go up in a few days, dear listener, you'll probably know what that major thing, if any, is. But we are going to take some guesses now. The NAFTA thing to me is, I'm hesitant to go say I think it's like really likely, because I was bullish on it early, and then I was like, you know what? Like, there seem to be enough people restraining him, because that's a stark thing to do. But now I'm like, maybe
the consequences for him would be bad, I think. I mean, not just, you know, I sort of think NAFTA's okay, but if he suddenly pulls out of that, there's instantly going to be a lot of bad things that happen to the U.S. economy, and somebody's going to tell him that. I wouldn't be surprised if there were an executive order in which he said, let's consider pulling out of NAFTA unless something changes, but I'm not sure that will be a big enough thing for him.
The words that I've seen used up until now also indicate that he's not actually going to do it in the next week, because it's saying, you know, that we're going to present a draft or something like that. It's not like this is a done deal.
There's a New York Times story tonight, and the language is, President Trump is likely to sign an executive action that would begin the process of withdrawing the United States from the North American Free Trade Agreement, a senior administration official said Wednesday. The problem is, in the Obama administration, you read that and think, oh, looks like it's likely. In the Trump administration, who knows?
Who knows? They also, it's different. He could just give intent, you know, notify them his intent to withdraw. He doesn't need to sign an executive order to do this. The executive order is like, he's issued a lot of executive orders that are like this. It's basically say, let's think about the idea of doing this policy someday. I think it's not going to be a real, like, this won't count as pulling out of NAFTA. Like the wall.
It'll be like the wall.
Do you think any money is allocated to the wall this year in this budget?
No.
Depends what you mean by allocating to the wall. No. I don't think they're gonna actually build a wall and spend a lot of money on it. But I think they will put some money to border security and call it the wall. And maybe technically, in some sense, it'll be a wall.
Is wall going to be like an acronym?
Do you mean spending beyond what has normally been spent for our normal border security?
Yes. I mean extra wall-related spending.
I think they'll try to call something extra wall-related spending, and I think it might be somewhat extra spending, because they'll negotiate a little bit more spending for that with Democrats. But I don't think that we are going to build a wall over the mountains along the border.
So you think Potemkin wall? It'll be a Potemkin wall.
I think it'll be, they will make it look like more of a wall than it is, yes.
And I don't think it's going to have the word wall in it.
I think they're going to use the word wall in some way, although it may be a metaphorical wall.
Yeah, the wall, metaphorical wall.
Figurative.
Wall is the brand, but Mexico has to pay for it. And so I think to say, yes, we're going to spend more money on a wall that we're paying for, not Mexico, I think that's actually damaging.
You would think so. Yeah, can I just editorialize for a second?
Yeah,
the
go.
Idea that he threatened to shut down the government to get the U.S. to pay for the wall that he promised Mexico would pay for is remarkable to me.
Yeah, and it lasted about a day, that threat. Yeah. So, yeah.
He did say, to his credit, that Mexico would eventually pay in some form.
I don't know if that's to his credit at all. That's absurd.
Oh, yes. But I saw...
Trump's are behind him.
There is a great theory on this, and this was, I don't remember which comedian. I think this was from Trevor Noah, but the idea is that they will allow more Mexicans into the U.S., those guys will work, and the taxes from that will pay for the wall.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
yeah,
why not?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. I think he's going to try to do something, but I think he may
Or they could increase the price of visas coming to the U.S. and then use that money for the wall.
That's a lot of visas.
I was brainstorming wall revenue.
So if you make a visa like $20 extra, then we're talking about letting a billion people in from Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's absolutely a good idea. No, I think he'll try. I mean, I guess I think he'll try something, but I actually think he's going to really downplay the 100 days thing that up to now he's been touting, because he doesn't really have a lot of good options. I mean, they could do something dramatic, like announce they're pulling out of NAFTA or shut down the government for some reason. But those are going to look more desperate and sad, I think. And I think even Trump kind of knows that shutting down the government or something.
Do you think he's that self-aware?
I don't know, but it's not. I don't know. I mean, maybe they believe they could actually blame the Democrats for shutting down the government right now, but I don't think that's how it's going to look. And I think somebody around Trump is saying that's not a good idea.
I think he basically can reframe the question and say, I've given all of these possibilities out there. So taxes, he's putting out a plan now or with Congress that, you know, we're going to reduce corporate taxes to 15%, give a one-time, not an exemption, but a reduction for bringing profits back to the U.S. All of this, you know, simplify the plan from 7 to 3 categories, which is basically a quick, easy way to cut taxes to the high, you know, to the rich people. But anyway, it's a way he can say, no, I'm just simplifying. He can say, look, I'm trying to do all these things. Now it's up to Congress to work. If Congress doesn't work, that's not my problem. I was here. I've given the chance. I've done what I can for America. If Congress doesn't act, what are we going to do? If the courts keep blocking me, I'm stuck. But I've given my level best to get this thing done. Now I present it to the people.
If he continues to be blocked by unelected judges in a Pacific island, an island in the middle of the Pacific, what can he do?
Hawaii, Seattle, and LA are going to destroy him.
I think it's not that I disagree with you guys. I tend to think that we will see something dramatic in the next few days.
Militarily or what?
I don't know. Just
because
something.
Militarily is North Korea's thing he could do.
Right.
No, it is. Well, yes. There are a few things.
If he tries to sneak a bombing in under the 100-day mark, though, that's really going to look like the dog ate his homework.
What do you think the probability is that we bomb someone between now and when is the 100 days? Is it the 29th or the 30th? So in the next few days, there's a military action.
I would still say low.
I would still say low, too, but I wish I could say that it was very low, and I can't.
I know. Yes, I know.
I would say like under 5%, but I don't know. A little bit of this would depend on, I would assume that both Assad and Kim will stay quiet for the next few days. If they stay quiet, then I think it would be pretty hard to do a strike without provocation.
Yeah, I think they're going to want something in the news before they do another action.
Yeah.
Do you think he might re-swear in Gorsuch? Just like renewing his vows?
No.
Just in the 100 days, bring it back out. Let's just go over him again for the photo op.
Probability of a person orbiting Mars in Trump's first term?
Oh my God. I love the story so much. Can you just tell the listener who may have missed the story?
So I forget. So Trump was meeting with, I guess, astronaut Peggy Whitson, who was the commander of the International Space Station, had been in space for the longest days for an American astronaut, I think, or meeting with, I guess maybe it was on a phone call. And he was talking about timing for a Mars visit. And she said, it'll be around the 2030s. We're going to try to get to Mars. And that's, you know, that's actually in a bill that was passed recently. And Trump said,
right.
And I'm quoting here, it's a Washington Post article. Well, we want to try to do it during my first term or at worst during my second term. So we'll have to speed that up a little bit. Okay.
Well, he's in line with Elon Musk now. Because when did Elon Musk plan
not
to get
by
there?
2024. I think they're considering launching in 2024. It's hard. It's very hard. I don't think people appreciate how hard it is just to get someone to Mars, you know, alive, with maybe the prospect of coming home, not with a ton of radiation. But also you have a limited number of windows. Mars can be much further away from the U.S. at certain, or the Earth at sometimes.
If I remember right, is it every 18 months?
I think that may be right. Maybe every 18 months,
something
it's
like
relatively
that.
Close. I think I just referred to the Earth as the U.S., which may show my America-centrism.
It's in your head, man.
Your bias.
Your head. Yeah. Yep.
Well, USA.
I really did think that Elon had some idea before 2025. I don't remember, but it was, and he's always aspirational anyway.
I think he's doing commercial flights around the moon.
Yeah.
Soon.
He's not known for making his deadlines either.
Exactly. But he was, yeah. I agree.
And this feels like very much a measure twice, cut once kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, make certain you have your T's crossed, your I's.
You would think so, because, I mean, if you're going to sign up for a Mars trip, the thing is, though, if you had a half-assed Mars trip, you could get 200,000 people to sign up to go today.
Like, half-assed. You just,
like, just throw people like,
just stick them in a cab and launch them.
I mean, it would be terrible press when they died halfway there, right?
Yes. They would not even die halfway there.
Explode on the pad. Yeah.
Yes. It would never get close.
So this is too much scientific information, but How much is the International Space Station protected from radiation that a trip to Mars would not? Is the International Space Station still close enough within our orbit that it's somehow protected by our...
That's a really good question.
Sort of,
I assume it is within the magnetosphere to some extent.
I don't.
Exactly, because they've been out for... You know, they've had people there for basically close to a year. The person he was just speaking to, Whitson, I think has been, she spent 500 and some days in space or something like that. So this is already significant time. But if the the magnetosphere is protecting them, then that's a totally different ballgame compared to being further out. And that I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even though I was all in favor of the March for Science, I don't know that data.
That's the essence of being a scientist.
Yeah.
Saying, I don't know, I want to learn.
Yeah. You're not required to know every scientist.
Literally make some shit up.
Yeah.
Did you march for science in Romania?
Only around my house.
That's not, that counts.
Yeah, I hit the like button a bunch of times. So
that
does that
count?
How
you change the world.
That's right.
Yeah,
did you march in St. Louis, Steve?
I did not.
I supported my sister marching. I was happy.
Yeah, I bought a t-shirt. I don't even know who the money went to. I said, yeah, science. No, I did not march for science. I'm trying to save my
march. It's a lot of marches you could do.
It's a lot. Like, I'm on board with the marches, but I just don't want to go out marching for everything.
We did a march, but it was interesting because it was I want to say it wasn't the most effective march. I felt like the scientists were genuinely not paid activists, professional activists. They didn't know what to do. We needed like cowbell and yelling. It was very quiet. We just shuffled along.
Let me say, by the way, that the fact that conservative media and Republicans have managed to turn structured activism into a negative blows my mind.
Why?
Like the idea that two people coordinating in something means that suddenly it's not really grassroots.
It's a conspiracy.
Like we all have to just kind of... Like, we have to wander into a street at the same time. It's like, oh, so there are 30,000 of us. Like, that's the only way it's an organic, authentic march.
But
nonsense.
I thought that basically conservatism tended to be against most all forms of activism.
Well, not the America Great rallies or the Tea Party.
No, but outside, yeah, the Tea Party is an exception. But I think outside of the election times, they generally don't want rocking the boat. So,
yeah.
I mean, the Tea Party is an exception to that. But I think in general, they think anybody going out into the street just involves weirdness.
Yeah, troublemaker, rabble rouser.
Yeah.
All right. So we are going to do another podcast in a couple of days. We'll get this one out and then we'll get that one out because we want to do some summer forecasts. And we're working on them now. So we're going to cut this one a little short so we can do our homework, study up on blockbusters, the latest songs, hit songs of the summer, whatever the summer jam is going to be. What's the summer jam in Romania going to be, Scott?
No idea. It'll be from a guy.
You couldn't even hopefully bother to make him
no,
a joke.
But I can tell you
no
something.
Idea.
It'll be from Smiley. So as much as I sort of portray this as a bleak area, there's a great artist here named Smiley, who is really a cool guy. So you got to be with that name.
Closing thought. You guys don't think anything dramatic is going to happen between now and the 100-day mark. You think he downplays it?
I think he downplays it. I think it's going to fizzle, but I'm not 100% confident of that. I also,
if there were
a missile strike, I wouldn't, you know, be like, oh, that's shocking. I mean, it's shocking in some sense, but not surprising.
Right. Not in our desensitized.
I don't think we're going to have an unprovoked one. I don't think we're going to do an unprovoked military attack.
Is that because you think he's not capable of it or because you think it's a bad idea?
Because I think that the targets right now are essentially, I think Mattis was very clear on Syria that we're not going to attack Syria short of them doing something more with chemical weapons or some type of weapons of mass destruction. And I think in North Korea, basically, it's a really bad idea. But if he does it in this 100 days, if he does it in the next 3 days, and this would be starting a major war, if it appears that he did that just to have a good number on the 100-day score, that's really going to go down bad. And I think his military would block that. I mean, I think they'd just be like, sorry, you know, do it 2 weeks from now. Don't do it now. You know, that's really bad optics.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, Scott, you actually sent us a picture of your office, your CIA office in
Romania.
How do you not know this with your CIA job?
I don't have the compartmentalized clearances for this one. So
why is the CIA office over a karaoke bar?
This is cool. It's really, really cool. So background on this, so I don't sound, you know, I don't end up having people come and take me away.
You may.
In my town, it's really right on the main walking street, like the most prominent road in town, is a big sign up in the air saying CIA Sibiu. I live in the town called Sibiu. It's the Chamber of Commerce, but it's really cool.
It's bizarre because everyone around the world knows the initial CIA, right? It's like, hello, Coca-Cola and CIA. Those are the things you know from the U.S.
Right.
All right. We'll come back in the next couple of days. We'll do some summer forecasts, and we'll see what happens in the next few days in terms of the 100-day mark. All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.